It was all a dream. I used to read a Word Up magazine. Salt and pepper and have a D up in the limousine. Hanging pictures on my wall. Every Saturday at the Mr. Magic Molly Mall. I let my tape drop. Sorry. He starts reloading there.
You want to do it again? We'll do it again. Keep on rolling. Don't worry. We'll go again.
I'll just keep continuing.
All right.
Smoking weed and bamboo, sipping on my private stock. Way back when I had a red and black lumberjack with a hat to match. Remember rapping Duke? Da-ha-da-ha. Never thought that hip-hop would take it this far. Now I'm in the limelight because I rhyme tight. Time to get paid. Blow up like the World Trade. Born sinner. The opposite of a winner. Remember when I used to eat sardines for dinner? Peace to Ron G, Bruce B, Kid Capri. Fuck Master Flex. Love Bug Star Ski. I'm blowing up like I thought I would. Call the crib. Same number, same hood. It's all good.
Thanks, man. Thanks for opening up the show that way. Nobody's done that one.
No,
I know that
that's
for
surprising. Right. That's actually surprising. Yeah.
No,
that's
nobody's done that. After so many shows, I figure I kind of got to go back into the library and find out how many of their different tracks, right?
Oh, yeah. That's a classic from my childhood.
No. How young are you, man?
I'm 39. I'll be 40 in May.
Okay, cool, man. Well, thanks for reaching out. I appreciate you reaching out.
For sure.
You're a union guy, right?
Yes, I am. Proud union guy.
Yeah. Local?
Local 27.
Yeah. Busy?
We're always busy.
Yeah.
We're always busy, and we're always looking to hire new.
What about the rumors that are going on that guys are at home?
So unfortunately, that is a fact. I know a lot of people are at home, and a lot of good carpenters are at home.
Yeah.
So that does need to change. I'm not sure how we fix this situation, but long term, I see bright things. We have a lot of work coming up, and
there's contracts in play right now, because I thought a lot of high rise was literally shutting down, man.
High-rise sector, at least for my company and my union, I know we're busy. We have a lot of buildings coming up.
Wow.
I know at least 5 to 10 buildings, easy.
What are we talking about, in the core or outside of the core?
Both.
Everything, right?
Yeah, everywhere. Inside the core, my company, Cancian, we have at least 3 or 4 inside the core of Toronto right now, and we just finished at least 2 outside the core, and we have another 2 or 3 outside the core as well coming up.
It's refreshing to hear that, man. Because a lot of stops, right? But a lot of uncertainty in construction, right?
There is a lot of uncertainty, but you know what? If you're a good worker, there's work. It's as simple as that.
That's really as simple as that. No. So I'm glad that you reached out. We're going to talk, obviously, about the union, about carpentry, your trade, how long you've been in the business. We'll go everywhere. We'll go a bunch of different places and we'll just shoot the shit, right? So I want to do one quick shout out. I had Complete Home Services. He sent me a message just to remind me, because I made a comment about shutoffs regarding new builds, low rise.
Yeah.
And you're not allowed to put on the furnace, turn it on. And get it going, because all of a sudden I started saying it has a lot to do with the HVAC guys, or even the warranty of the machine. You're going to damage it if you start circulating heat to keep the dwelling warm enough to continue doing the work. And he was just reminding me that a lot of it actually has to do with Enbridge themselves.
Right.
They refuse to turn it on. And I'm like, well, this needs to change. So he was just bringing up a moment. He was just like, I watched your last episode with the flooring guy, and you were talking about turning on the furnace, and all of a sudden you should really blame Enbridge. And then he just goes on, those fuckers are the reason you cannot turn the furnace on unless the furnace is spec for construction heat, with a long list of things to do after. Also, Enbridge won't turn the gas on unless all drywall is finished and primed, at least from my experience. And he's right.
Yeah,
he's totally right about that.
I completely agree.
So it's a shame, because Enbridge needs, everybody that's attached to construction needs to be respectful of the entire process. You can't just deem certain
rules
for the sake of your benefit or whatever.
Yeah.
You got to still factor in from beginning to end, right?
I know in high res, it seems like that's, especially with the younger generation, everybody just tries to get ahead instead of helping each other. You know, one guy, like for example, I was working and I'm doing my thing inside the unit, and all of a sudden other trades are coming in, not on they're forced to come in, right? But it's crazy that everyone has to step over each other and not let.
So whose fault is that?
I think it's the supers.
That's what I figured.
I think it comes down to the leaders of the site. I won't say no names, but it definitely comes down to the supers.
That's what I thought. Yeah. Because why are they jumping the gun? Are they just trying to push the trade before?
I think they're just trying sooner. Maybe make their budgets. Make their. I don't know. I don't know what their prerogative is and why they do that. But it just doesn't seem right, because, I mean. I lost my train of thought there. Let's go back there.
Second. No. Because stacking the trades, right?
Okay.
It used to be called stacking the trades, where, you know, you get pressure from the homeowner, you try to get things done faster, and then they start insisting that you bring in certain trades a lot sooner than they should. But the problem is now you're going to slow down the process of the previous trade because they have everything already in place to do the work.
Right.
But now you're bringing in more bodies, which is going to complicate and then extend their time doing the work.
Right. I know when I first started in construction, the all these supers, they were mostly older guys, the older generation.
Who's in now?
It seems like it's all young guys. And that's, I think, that not that not the problem, but the old guys stuck to what worked.
Formal education, young guys?
Yeah, I think so. I'm not really sure what...
Because I can only say that the older guys were not formally educated.
And that's the thing. They did it by the work. They know what works.
Yes.
Because they've been doing it for so long.
Yes.
Maybe.
And it ran well.
It worked.
So
it
now worked. It's not
now running. I think the young guys, the new generation, I think what they're doing is trying to invent a new system. They're trying to change things, right? And it doesn't work. Sometimes it just doesn't work.
Listen, I'm all for changing things, but the problem is that you can't eliminate what's currently working. You right. need to
they want to do it their way, and they want to change to their way, and sometimes it's just
doesn't. But if it doesn't work, if it hasn't been proven, then why are you going to do it?
I know just the site I'm at right now, that's exactly the problem. I won't say the names, but that's exactly the problem. He's just trying to make things his way, and it doesn't work.
So is there everybody's got a boss.
Of course.
Everybody has a boss. So is not the boss of that super telling them?
That I don't know.
This ain't working.
You would think, but.
Or maybe they're on the same path?
I think so. It seems to be a pattern with this specific company.
Okay. So I'm just curious, because I'd love for you to tell us about your journey, like when you first got started in.
For sure.
And you basically went, you know, obviously you had to go up the ranks, right? You had
so
to get to the
my
point
story
where you
is got. A little bit different from the average apprentice growing up to a journeyman. My story was definitely different. I started 2013, I believe I started construction.
Okay.
Not unionized. That was a company called Finesse. I want to give them a big shout out because I learned a lot there.
What were they focusing on?
They're commercial.
Commercial.
Yeah, they're all commercial. I learned a lot there, so I definitely have to give my
commercial
shout out.
Commercial is a great way to get in, to learn a lot.
You know,
because you do a bunch of things differently and you really learn efficiency.
Yeah, every young person I tell now, even like you spoke about earlier, it's hard to get into like the young guys getting in and secure jobs, right? So I always tell them, you can still be in the union, right? Pay your dues. And if you're slow and you don't want to stay at home, go find a non-union job because you'll learn a lot this way. That's what I did, right? So I did that for a while. Eventually, I wanted to grow myself. So I joined the union. I joined residential.
Track building,
Residential housing.
Yeah, so track subdivision.
Exactly, subdivisions.
Okay, as what? As a carpenter?
As a carpenter, as a trim, okay. Finished carpenter.
So what age? So you said you
this
got started at 13.
That was about 2013, 2014, around that time.
Oh, 2000. So, okay, I thought you were 13 years old.
No, 2013. I mean, I started construction at his age.
Yeah,
at my son's age.
Yeah.
Just doing family stuff,
yeah,
on the
course.
Neighbor stuff.
But when did you actually start?
So,
hey, I got a paycheck because I swung a hammer.
Oh man, I was young, in the 20s for sure.
Okay.
For sure in my 20s. Right. So I learned a lot of finesse. Then I grew to residential. I moved to residential. I worked with my buddies doing trim carpentry. Did that for about 4 or 5
years.
Was
it a bunch of you guys that all came up the same rank?
No, that was just me.
Just
at the time,
you.
Just me.
And then you made connections when you got started.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. So I did that for about 4 or 5 years, learned a lot myself about trim carpentry. Eventually, you know, I knew, not that we were being slow, but I wanted a change. I felt like I needed a change, and I felt that was very important to me in my life.
How
during
many
that
years
time.
Did you do that for?
Residential, I did about for 5 years,
that's
five or six
of,
years.
That's a lot of houses, man.
Now, you got to remember, I joined the union, and in the union, there's a structure to how you grow. First year apprentice, second year apprentice, et cetera, right? To become a journeyman.
Okay.
I did that for 5-6 years being a first year journeyman, first year apprentice, right? I always knew, I never understood the full system and how it worked, but I started learning as I started
Did
working.
Did anybody guide you?
This is the thing, the guys, not that it's their fault, the guys I worked with, they didn't explain things, it wasn't, because they didn't know. It's not really their fault. They didn't know. They are peace workers, right?
Yeah.
So it doesn't apply to them, I guess, in a way.
This is still, sorry, this is still
residential.
Residential, non-union though.
No, this is union now. This is now. Union now. At this point, I've joined the union, and I'm in the union 4 or 5 years working with these guys.
But you're union rep. Are they not reaching out to you and talking to you and kind of guiding you?
That's part of the problem. I think
they don't do that.
They do, but they never explained to me. I always knew about the schooling system because we have a very structured schooling system.
Yeah, there's a lot of training.
I encourage everybody to go do become a carpenter. You'll learn a lot, and it's the best way to become a carpenter. That was never explained to me when I joined the union, or as the years I worked during residential. It was never explained to me. So fast forward, after I'd done residential, I got into high rise. That changed my life.
Different. So you went from one company to another company?
Exactly, completely different company. This was during COVID.
Right? And what was the first thing that you saw differently going from residential low rise to high rise?
Structure.
The structure of the actual workflow.
The structure of the actual being a union carpenter, right?
So what do you mean by that?
So this is when I fully learned about what a first year a carpenter means to be.
Okay.
What a second year, what that means to be, and so on, and how to become a journeyman, and what that means and the responsibilities that you need to have to become a journeyman.
So right away in high rise, they started showing you how this is all.
Not that they showed me, I see it with my own eyes. It was a completely what was I wasting my time on all these years, right? Mm. So during that time, so you got to remember, as I became a high rise carpenter, I already had all the hours to become a journeyman. There's two ways to become a journeyman. You do the schooling system,
yep,
which is the right way,
yeah,
or you do it the blood, sweat, and tears way, the way I did it, right?
Yeah. And you get your hours, and then you...
So you accumulate your hours, and then, let's say, you become whatever hours your first year, third year, journeyman, whatever, right? So I became a journeyman. So during the high rise, I worked during high rise maybe a year. And then when I fully realized the system and how it works, I reached out to my boss, and then we talked about it. I'm like, this is the situation. During this time, also, I need to add that I had other job offers, right, from other unions, right?
Okay, for other trades?
Same trade, but just different union. So I had to think really hard of what I wanted to do at this point, right? They were offering me at the time a lot more money than I was making currently at the time.
Let me ask you, when they approached you to come to a different union,
yeah,
what was the first sales soundbite? Was money. It the more money?
Money, 100% money.
So that was it. It was just the more money part of it.
More money, that's
that was the 100%. Sales pitch.
And if I would have
went... How much more money are we talking about here?
At the time, I was only making around $32 an hour.
And they were
They pitched me $42 an hour. So it's very substantial.
So how are they able to pitch you that and the current couldn't pitch you that?
That was the part of the problem. They never pitched it to me, but I knew I deserved, because at the time a journeyman makes more than 42 an hour, right? So I knew
based on your experience, right?
Based on the experience, I knew if I can get my hours together and become a journeyman, which I fully deserved at the time, why would I leave?
Yeah.
Right. So I had to figure that out. And I did. I figured that out. My union rep, thank God for him, John, I love you. He made some big changes in my life. And once he came, he's a new union rep. And when he came, we figured out my hours and I became a journeyman instantly. And since then, I never looked back. And thank God, I think to this day, I never changed my union. That I'm still a local Toy Center member.
If you left?
I know, pension would have changed. I would have started my pension from scratch.
So you would have lost your pension from that?
Not that I lost it, but I wouldn't have got my full pension that you would get as a local 27 carpenter, a full pension.
Got it, right? Yeah.
You start fresh, basically, right?
And then how many years you've been with 27 since that day, that moment there?
So I joined 2013, and I'm still a local 27 member.
You're still there, okay. Oh, so you're over a decade there.
Oh, yeah, more than a decade, yeah.
And I mean, obviously, you got the last decade where construction's been going up, 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 always. There's always been plenty of work, but now it's starting to shift a tiny bit, like we said earlier.
There's definitely a shift, especially in residential, right? This is another reason why thank God I left residential, but like at the time,
you focused on high
at the
rise.
Time, thank God I focused on what I had to focus on. Residential is slow from all sectors. It's slow, and I know guys that have been in a local 27 residential for many, many years and have a lot of respect, let's say, and they're slow. If they're slow, that's a problem, right? Because if they're going to get the first jobs.
Attention contractors and construction professionals. Do you feel like your expenses are way too high? Imagine cutting your spending by 28%. At Schooley Mitchell, they dig deep to help you save on essential expenses that could be impacting your bottom line. Their risk-free analysis allows you to concentrate on your trade while they find those savings for you. Don't let extra expenses keep you from achieving the success you deserve. Reach out today to schedule your risk-free analysis and unlock your savings. Find them at www.schooleymitchell.com/office/AEGIUGGIO/about. Or reach out to them at erica.jugio@schooleymitchell.com. This message is proudly supported by The Construction Life. How do we fix this problem? Like I've said it on the show so many times. It's a lot of development red tape, right?
Share, gain some kind of market share. We need to increase our market share, which is I know the number is 70%. I learned this in Las Vegas, which we should get into.
Yeah.
Other unions are taking a lot of our jobs, right? Not to say
so
that.
So wait, hang on a sec. So what are you saying about 70% market share?
So
the unions are taking 70%.
If we want to, everybody wants more money, right?
Of course.
So in order for us to get more money, we have to get more jobs. There's a lot of
you increase your value, your worth.
Of course. There's a lot of non-union jobs taking all the jobs, or not taking all the jobs, but taking jobs that should be part of, because those guys are not getting paid what they should. Their benefits are not what they should, and they're working their asses off, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So they should definitely be if you're work construction, you should be a local member.
So unions losing market share to non-union,
right?
But non-union are getting the work because they're offering a cheaper price.
Exactly.
It's not necessarily a better quality, but it's a cheaper price. And in today's economy, price is killing.
Exactly. And because of the economy, it's lowering our market share. So we need to increase it to 70%. That's the magic number.
So how do we turn that around? What has the union been saying on how do we do that?
We're actually just speaking on that now and how to fix that and what we should be doing, spreading our word, spreading the information. That's one way.
What are the thoughts on the union regarding getting more people into construction?
Well, there's definitely a push. We always encourage it. Currently, we just opened up a huge building with half of it is residential and half of it is high res. It's basically to get kids coming out of high school to learn the trades, to get into a trade. It's kind of like a preschool. But the thing is, you get paid for it and the hours go towards your apprenticeship. And not only that, you get decked out full of tools, DeWalt tools.
Is it government subsidized?
I'm not sure where the money comes from, but I think it just comes out of the pockets of the local 27 board, right?
And then you were saying that DeWalt supplies all the tools?
That's what the tools they buy, to be honest. That's just everyone gets a
set. No, I was just curious if DeWalt.
I'm not sure why. I don't think DeWalt actually does that.
Them.
But I think everybody gets a DeWalt pack out, everything, right? It's like an incentive.
Yeah, of course. It makes sense, right?
This is new. This has only been around maybe a year. Aaron is a trainer there. We definitely reach out to him if you want to learn more information about that. He's a great trainer.
I'd just be curious on the selection of kids that are coming out there, because I think a lot of the kids that are getting into construction these days, they're not getting in for the right reasons, and they're definitely not staying in construction the same way.
You know what? If you want to be a successful carpenter, you need to be a hard worker. You need to love what you do, and you need to have pride in what you do. And that's the number one. I see a lot of young.
It's not there anymore.
Not that it's not there, but I see it too often where young guys come in and as a first-year carpenter, and keep in mind, first-year carpenters make pretty good money, right? Considering, let's say, remember my story, right? It's crazy what first years make compared to what I was making at first year.
Yeah, yeah.
So they come in, they're making great money at a very young age, and they have a structure. They see I'm going to be making this much money in 5 years, right? So it seems like their pride in their work, it lacks. Right. And I tell the young guys all the time, you have to care, like doing such simple things. You have to care about what you do.
It's hard for them to care because I honestly think, what is it for a carpenter? 9,000 hours?
7,500.
when you tell a kid 7,500 hours, they start doing the math and they start realizing how many years that is.
Right.
And they're not all that receptive to it.
Right.
They probably, if they had a choice, can you guys cut that in half? Can you cut it down to a fifth? But there's a reason why you have the 75 hours. Yeah, there's 7,500.
Very good reason for that, right? The training is very important, right? The training, the real life training you get is very important. But the only other way is going to the schooling. So we have first year, intermediate, and advanced.
Yeah.
Right? So you do all three, and you have to have a certain amount of hours. I forgot the exact amount. I think it's 1,300 hours you have to have before you move on. So you do first year, your basic training, and 1,300 hours, then you do your intermediate, and so on. And that, you become a journeyman faster that way.
Are you seeing people leaving the construction industry? Not necessarily the union, but just leaving the construction
industry. You know what? Once you're in, I think it opens up their eyes. No, they're not leaving. The only reason they would leave is because of lack of work. Right? That's
They got to pay bills, right?
They're forced to leave.
Yeah.
So, and that's the problem. That is a big problem, I feel. Right, we need to have more work for these guys that are coming in or that are at home. Because I know a lot of carpenters are at home, and a lot of older guys are at home. The guys that should be working, guys that have the experience, right? They're at home, and it's an unfortunate thing. We need to get these guys back in the workplace.
So you tell me. I mean, I'm just curious. But as a carpenter trade in the union, do you start off with scaffolding, or were you starting off with?
Okay, so. No, carpentry, there's so many branches. I learned this recently when I went to Vegas. So the UBC, the International Training Center of Carpentry, is in Vegas.
Okay, I didn't know that.
Yeah, or it's a huge facility. I think it's 1.7 million square feet. So when I was there, you realize that, you know what, you can start in carpentry, any kind of carpentry, framing, trim, scaffolding. But you can branch out to so many other things. For example, like underwater welding,
mass
timber. We do the training for that.
Oh, okay.
You get certified at the International Training Center in Vegas, right? Now, you, as a Local 27 member, they select you to go at third year. There's a third year training program. It's completely paid for. You're paid while being there. Food, all that stuff. And you get spending money. So $200 spending money.
How long is the training?
It's about 3 or 4 days.
Okay.
So you go there as a third year. You get your training. You go again as a journeyman for more training. And after you get that journeyman training, there is another training that you do. It's called 212, which is part of the first journeyman training. It's just a second part of it. And then
you're going back to Vegas every time.
Going back to Vegas every time. A lot of people don't know this, right? So once you're there, you realize that there are so much more to carpentry than you think, like mass timber, underwater welding, power driving, all that stuff. That's all UBC. That's all not necessarily Local 27, but it's our union.
Where did you end up? Like, what is it that you do right now?
So I'm a high-rise carpenter, finished trim carpenter.
Oh, you're doing finished trim?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And I'm very proud. I'm very happy to be there. I've personally done framing, forming, different low rise carpentry, commercial carpentry, and I am now high rise, which I love. I think for me personally, it's where.
Are you part of a crew?
Yeah, I don't have my own crew. I work with a crew.
Okay, and then how many guys are in the crew that take care of?
I work for a pretty big company in high rise, a pretty well known company, Canson. Shout out.
Yeah.
My crew itself, we have maybe about 5 to 8 guys.
Okay.
Right. We're at the end of our job site, so guys are starting to go to the other job sites.
So how quick is it? Like, I'm trying to figure out when you're getting in, you're finally given the unit to work on. Yeah. How much time are you given to actually finish the unit?
Well, it doesn't work that way. It's like steps. So it's like once the painters come in in prime, we come in, the carpenters come in, we start doing doors. Once doors are installed, we can do baseboard, for example, right? And there's a lot of little things like that.
Before or after the flooring? It's before the flooring.
So every site's different. The site we're at now, it goes in after the flooring. Okay. Right? I mean, it's easier that way for the younger guys because, they're on floor and they're not on
after
concrete. It's easier. You just put it on top. But I grew up always doing it before flooring.
Really, huh?
Yeah.
But it's more work, though, for the flooring guy.
If you do it right, it's not. You know, if you put it, let's say, for example, too low, it becomes a problem, right? The floor can't fit underneath.
Yeah.
So if you do it the right way, it's fine.
And then, so how much time are you given? I guess is it per floor, per unit, or how does it work?
every site and every super is different. It's different. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Right.
There, it seems like now, to go back to what we were talking about earlier, the time, like I'm doing doors, and then there's another trade in there, moving around, moving my stuff, and it's like, what are you doing? Let me finish my doors. And
you're doing doors. Right? What are they in there? They're doing tiling.
Electricians come in. Tiles, exactly. Tile guys would come in.
Why would the electricians guys come in? They're coming in for what?
Just.
They're putting plates on already? No, it's primed.
There's just messing around with outlets and stuff like that. Not necessarily always electricians, but just any trade, anybody, right? It doesn't matter. Last week, as an example, I'm doing doors, and you have the furniture guys, not furniture, the fridge and stove appliances. Guys, appliance guys
coming in. Already?
They're just bringing them in, right? At the same time,
but the place hasn't been painted yet.
At the same time, kitchen guys are bringing their stuff in. It's like, what are you doing? You shouldn't be coming in yet, right? It's just a mess. And
so that goes back to, I think, the super and scheduling.
100%, that's what it goes back to.
But don't everybody realize that it just delays the overall completion of the unit?
That's what we're trying to tell. That's exactly the point.
But that's what it does, right? That's
exactly the point.
So there's no sense in you coming in and just doing one part of what you need to take care of, whether you're the carpenter, the tile, the appliances, or the kitchen, whatever it is. If you just do one part of it, it takes longer to do that instead of you coming in that one day to do all of it.
Right. Not 100%.
That's more efficient, right?
That's common sense to me. I don't know why they do it the way they do.
It's just, okay, so is it completely different? Are the job sites different than what you remember when you guys started 10 years ago?
Yeah, 100% different.
What's the difference?
I would say 100% different. I think overall attitude, it's more of a joke.
So it's the workers?
Yeah, the workers itself.
What do you mean it's a joke?
Not that it's a joke. I take that back. It's not as serious. People don't take the job as serious. Exactly. People don't take it as serious because now I find a lot of people are just making the money and going home.
They're punching the clock.
They're, for example, like someone like me, when I started in construction, I used to walk around with a notepad, right? So anything I didn't know, I would write down. At the time, I wasn't maybe articulate enough. So if I didn't understand something by writing it down, I would draw pictures and like label things. And that helped me in so many ways. You don't see none of that now.
Nobody's doing any homework.
No, unfortunately, no one does homework after work, before work, or whatever the case may be, right? It's just check in, check out, collect the paycheck, and that drives me crazy.
Is it because they don't want to stay there for good?
No, I don't think so. I think they're very happy at what they're doing.
It's something along that, like if they got that job offer that you got 10 years ago.
I don't think they realize the money they're making now and how lucky they are to be making that money.
Compared to what
could have been. Right, especially a lot of these young guys are young, making this money. In my eyes, it's a blessing for them.
Why did they automatically just assume that they could be making more money someplace else? They haven't even looked into someplace else.
Mentality. I think it's just the young generation mentality.
Their circle of friends are just telling
probably
them.
Probably their friends, the people they work with. It's all young guys now, right? At the job sites. It's.
See, my fear is that in 20 years, it's not going to be all old guys.
Well, no.
They won't be there.
I forgot the numbers. What was the numbers? I think the majority of carpenters retiring is crazy compared to who's coming in.
Yeah, the replenishing. Right?
It's a problem. We need to, I mean, when the guys are retiring now, we're paying their pensions. But when I retire, who's going to pay my pension?
See, that's the domino, right? That's where I don't know if the unions or the government or anybody else has actually been crunching this number, because that's the real issue, right? Is that you've got a system in place that works the way it has, but the problem is that all the old guys that were developing this system, they're the ones that are exiting right now, and now you younger guys are coming in. There's that middle group,
right?
But this younger group, I don't think they're going to be there in their 30s and 40s. I think they're going to be gone. I think they're going to be in some other industry, some other business.
It's very possible.
Or hoping that they make money elsewhere and then they don't have to work. So you're going to lose more people at that point.
I can see that. Unless proper training comes out. We have our negotiations coming up very soon. I think it has to be done by May. I am part of the high-rise committee voice. I'm one of the voices.
Okay.
So we haven't had any meetings yet. Our first meeting will be on next Monday. So we'll see what the changes come up. It's going to be very interesting to see what people want, what is expected, and if it'll be like the last negotiations, because the last negotiations was the most we got ever. because of the economy, but the economy but hasn't gone better.
Is different.
It hasn't gone better in my eyes.
Does that mean that they're going to lose more stuff?
So they want, they were telling us we're not going to get what we got last time. No trade will.
Doesn't work like that.
But the economy hasn't gotten better. So
I don't think it's going to get better until 27.
Yeah, well, I don't see it getting better anytime soon. Yeah,
like, yeah, at least for the next couple of years. People are afraid to buy. People are afraid to spend money.
Right.
So if they're not spending money, then you're not building units. You're not expanding. I guess you could have the argument that all these units are being built for immigrants coming in here. But
you know, I've noticed a trend. I noticed that a lot of the new buildings that we're building have to be half renters and half people buying, because I think the government is forcing people, or wanting people more to rent and be in condos than rather in houses. I think it's just they make more money that way.
So are they're doing that on purpose? So are they making the units so expensive that you can't buy it, so then you'll just be left renting it?
It seems that way. Some sites seem that way. Like, I mean, how can you justify paying $1 million for a 700 square foot condo?
I don't. Right? And then what I don't like is the banks. The Canadian banks are in bed with this stuff because they try to still get you to sign and complete your mortgage and get it started.
Right.
But the commitments that you're being asked to do is actually going to put you in a far worse financial situation.
For sure.
You're better off just walking away from the deposit that you put in there.
Yeah.
And then, but now the builder's left with that unit and they have to somehow sell that unit.
Yeah.
But nobody's going to be buying that unit.
Yep.
Especially at the interest rate that's going to be offering. It doesn't matter how low it is right now. We don't know what it's going to be like 5 years from now.
Right now is such an unpredictable time. It's hard to say what's going to happen. I think in the next 5 years, everything's going to be different when it comes to the financial system, everything. Things are changing. And I think if you don't see that, you can't see that. I'm not sure, but it seems like things are changing.
Three-way the world. These little puppies, I'm speaking from experience. I've actually installed these and I love these. Three-way prefabricated inside drywall corner, the first one-piece solution for perfect, crisp corners every time. With three-way, you'll improve your quality, save on labor, and cut down on time. Traditional methods require three tapes, lots of sanding, and high skill. But with three-way corners, they install in just a fraction of the time with fewer steps. It is adjustable for any angle, reinforced to cover gaps, and designed to blend seamlessly into the corner. Say goodbye to pesky touch-ups and hello to flawless finishes. Try three-way today and revolutionize your drywall game. Perfect corners every time. To purchase or check out some how-to videos to see the installs in action, visit threeway.ca or connect with them at 306-514-3768 or drop them an email at threewaytheworld@gmail.com. Connect with me, TCL, and stop by the studio and get a free pack on us for anyone to try. And trust me, I'm telling you, you'll love it. This message is proudly supported by The Construction Life. I had somebody tell me recently, and I don't know if this is all throughout the States, but when you get a mortgage in the U.S.,
yeah,
at that interest rate that you get, it stays that interest rate for the entire term of your mortgage. It never changes.
That's how it should be.
Kind of makes sense, yeah, right? Because everybody's panicking. Everybody was panicking during this shift that was going on when everybody was being sold, you know, by really clever salespeople from the banking industry on variables, right? So basically, you know, like, this is how low it's going to be. Where, you know, economy's fine, everything's fine. But then they saw that jump in variable.
Right.
And now all of a sudden your mortgage payment doubled.
Right.
And then
now
what?
You can't afford it. Now what?
Now you're starting to sell, and now you got record high foreclosures, all kinds
exactly
of crap. And so it's like, in my eyes, the banking knew this was going to happen.
For sure.
But they just moved forward to do it, right? Which is a shame, because we were protected of the 2009 housing crisis.
Right.
You know, with Harper and that government, we were protected by that stuff. The U.S. were hit hard, and then they learned their lesson. But now it's happening in Canada.
Yep. It's happening hard.
So it all affects. I always say that, like, economy really hurts retail and construction. I can't imagine what retail right now is, especially with the competition on digital online purchasing compared to bricks and mortar retail.
Mm-hmm.
And then construction is the second one. Construction, yeah, is like, you can see that there's no work going on, but in the same breath, you got a lot of bodies that are saying more and more people coming into construction. We need more and more people.
Yeah.
No, we need more and more of the right people into construction, and we need to figure out who's right really good in construction and advance those individuals.
Yeah.
And let them grow the industry.
It comes down to mentality. You don't even need to be actually the best worker. like in terms of like what you do, because you can, you'll learn. It's all about the mentality. It's all about your mentality, punctuation, right? If you come late every day and or miss work a lot, it's a problem, right? Because there's other people that don't, and that would love to be in their shoes, right? So,
what's the reason why they're coming in late? They're coming in late because they don't want to come in to begin with.
They don't. Not that they don't care. Again, it comes down to how much the job means to them, how much they love what they do, right? For me, I love when I'm at home. I'm gonna be doing like something with carpentry.
Yeah, usually. You're gonna mess around.
I have a little mini shop I built in my basement. I just love to mess around, right? Because I love what I do. So when I miss work, it's what I do. And I think this started from my grandfather. My grandfather back home, rest in peace. He was a carpenter, a master carpenter back home in Italy. One of the first things I can remember building was a toolbox with him. And I think that's where my pride came from. And ever since then, I think he's guided me throughout my process, man. Right.
I think what the issue is that these kids that are coming into construction don't realize that you're getting an opportunity to be on a construction site, a professional construction site, with so many other people that have a lot of experience and knowledge. And instead of you coming in, you're going, I hate this job. I hate this location. I hate this. Right. Like, why don't you, like, I'm here for the next 8 hours or whatever it is. And I'm like, I could pick other people's brain. I could actually see other people do their work and learn lessons from them. I've got 8 hours to learn. Oh, my God.
That is exactly what I preach, right?
They're not doing that, though.
They're not. They're doing everything but that. Not everybody. There are a lot of people who care. But
you're wasting 8 hours. You're wasting that day of learning for future.
Right. That's exactly it, right? That's exactly why I walked around the notepad.
Yeah.
Because if I'm going to forget, right? So at least I can always go back and be like, wait a minute.
Everything on
exactly.
The
There's
same.
So much to learn. There is a lot to learn. You're not going to learn everything in one day. That's for sure. Being a carpenter takes years.
Of course. The hours are there for a reason. I totally agree with the hours, but you doesn't matter how you get them. Find out how you can get these hours.
For sure.
And that's the thing. So my point about that is, you can get on that job site and complain all day that it's cold, it's uncomfortable, it's whatever. You can complain all that, or you can learn shit.
For sure.
Learn a lot.
A lot of people complain. You know, I have situations where I journeyman, fourth year, fifth year. I think me personally, and I've had many arguments about this, when you become a journeyman, there are certain things I think you should be required to bring to the table, like a drill. Okay, like a basic drill. Not me. I bring all my own tools. Right, every tool I use on the job site is my personal trade. Because mainly is because if my boss says, "Hey, go do this," I go do it. If he says, "Go do this," boom, I go do it. I'm not looking for tools. I'm not looking for this or that. A lot of people don't take care of tools, and I take care of my tools. So I know that my work is going to show that. Right, a lot of older guys now, it seems like they complain about, why should I bring my drill? Why should I bring my own tools? Why should I do this?
Because you need them to do the job.
I had an example where I was a new guy, new journeyman, came into my job site, and he said that I brought my own saw. He's like, why are you doing that? Like, why? This is the first day, our first conversation. And I'm like, well, what do you mean by that? Like, you know, it's obvious, right? I don't, like, what kind of question is that, right?
Yeah.
How do I answer that kind of question? And he's like, some people say you're the problem.
Because you're bringing in your own
tools. Because I'm bringing them tools. And what he means by that is that he wants the companies to provide all tools, right? And to me, that's crazy, right? To me, that's crazy. A lot of people don't understand. If you bring your own tools, it looks good on you, right? It's as simple as that. Maybe not like the compressors or certain things, like a saw may be even too much, right? But for me, it's just it's not a big deal. I have it at home, so why not bring it?
They want the company or the union to provide all the tools?
Yes, they want the company to provide all tools, so they don't have to use your tools, right? And I don't see that mentality. That mentality is crazy.
And like, you being given tools doesn't make you skilled.
Not at all. Not at all.
Right?
My whole point is, when you become a journeyman, you should at least provide your own drill, right? So it's sending the wrong message to the young guys by saying that, oh, the company should be doing this and that, because it's going to slow you down when,
how many of the old guys came in on the job site and started saying, okay, well, where are my tools? You're going to give me some tools?
We have a couple guys in our company that are like that.
Really?
Unfortunately, yeah.
Where's this mindset coming from?
I don't know. In our negotiations, somebody even brought that up. And I, after the negotiations, like the meeting, our meetings, I kind of went up to him because he was with other people I knew, so it wasn't weird or anything. But I went up to him. I'm like, what do you mean by that? Like, you're a journeyman, right?
Yeah.
He's like, yes. I'm like, so you make great money. You make pretty good money, right? He's like, yeah. So I'm like, why can't you just provide your own drill? You can't bring your own drill? It's crazy, man.
So what do you think, like, Jean-Luc, like the future of construction, what do you think it's going to look like 30 years from now?
You know, we're not going nowhere. I see
every city, every country, everybody needs construction.
For sure. I think a lot of positives. I don't think I think it's a little bit negative now because there's a lot of people out of work. And I think that's really the only major negative. I wish that would change.
Yeah, but you can get the work. Even that's the thing. You can go find the work, right? Lots of people are asking for
things. I'm sure half the people that are home can find construction jobs. Maybe non-union.
Yes.
But they can find work. It just
means door knocking, get off the phone, get off of social media.
Yeah, exactly.
Start talking to people, start providing a service. Simple as that.
Right? Or go to the training, like I just said earlier.
Or upgrade, exactly.
If you apply for it, they'll accept you. It's free. You don't have to pay for anything. They will accept you. You go do that training, and then you have an edge over everybody else because you have at least some kind of training. So when you get on the job site, it's not like you're just like blind. It's, oh, go do this. Okay, how do I do that? Right? There's a lot of journeymen that went through the schooling, and this is another thing that we should touch on. The schooling, I believe, needs to change because they're learning things like carpenters, like 27 carpenters are learning how to weld in intermediate, like first schooling. Like, why are you learning to weld? Like, learn how to shoot a gun properly, or learn how to just do the most basic things, like how to use a saw, proper way of.
Are they not teaching the basic stuff?
So I mean, they are, but a lot of things are unnecessary. They're learning. Right, so I think if they focused, and this is changing. This is not. This is changing. Learning. I lost my train of thought there.
Oh no, that's fine. No, about the training, about the teaching, and they're not getting. They're not learning the skills, right?
Yeah. So I mean, that's changing. We're changing our whole schooling system, basically. So it's gonna. Hopefully that's gonna motivate a lot of the younger guys, because.
I don't know if that's going to motivate them to come into construction. I really want people to start telling me ideas on how to keep them in construction, right? So let's take you for example, right? So in 20, what are you pushing 40 soon, right?
40 next, a couple months.
Yeah, so all of a sudden, you probably realistically got 20 more years in construction, right?
Right.
And then you've got your pension, everything's fine. You've worked with the union for 20 years now.
Yeah.
Now you're leaving construction, but what are you leaving? Like what's it going to look like at that point? So you've got somebody who's just being born right now that's going to get into construction next year, right? So in 20 years, when they're 20 years old, they're going to get started in construction. And then what are they going to go through the path for the next, 40 years or so?
That's a hard question. I don't know. I'm not really sure. I know it's going to be positive because there's a lot of people behind the scenes who care. Our union really cares about the future, and we cares about every individual in our union.
Is the union worried about AI and robotics?
So that is, I've heard that.
Has it come
many
up
times?
In conversation?
Oh, for sure. It definitely comes up. But I me personally, in carpentry, I don't think that's even possible, right? Not that maybe there's some things.
I wouldn't say impossible. 5 years ago, I would say impossible, but I wouldn't say impossible now. Like when you've got, I recently found out that Amazon was in Quebec and the workers wanted to go unionize. And they kept on pushing Amazon for that. And then ultimately, there was too much friction between the two because of what the union and the workers were asking for. Mm-hmm. So what did Amazon do? They left. Amazon's not in Quebec.
Wow.
So they're going to wait. Amazon is becoming fully automated.
Fully automated, yeah.
Right? Like we've seen it happen. It's happening. So you're getting rid of the workers. So I wouldn't say construction is impossible that it will be replaced by robotics. I think the workforce is going to get reduced and the union is going to be the first frontline casualty. Because they have to still defend you guys, right? They still have to defend the workers.
For sure.
But when you got business owners that are running organizations and they're building structures and they can do a cost analysis where it's cheaper to do a robot versus a worker,
I'm not sure. I mean, I agree that in some aspects, I don't know what aspects, but I agree AI will be taking over something. What? I have no idea. I can't even comprehend what it could possibly be.
It's
going
to begin by integration. So you guys are going to be given tools that will assist you to do the work faster, probably cleaner, simpler, right? So there'll be some tools that are, like, we already see some sort of form of AI in our tools where you start getting different companies offering tracking systems on the tools.
Right. Yeah.
So if they're stolen, but that's all AI driven, right? That's just digital.
It's the beginning, yeah.
It's the beginning of it. So now if you start getting on a job site, so you start with doors. You're installing a door. If there's someone that could build a machine that could automate installing that door.
The problem with that, I see, there are so many factors. We'll use put up a door, for example. Sometimes the drywall is not clean, and you have to clean the drywall in order to put the door on properly. These little things, or you have to do a simple rip that you don't see, right? There's so many little things. How can AI, I mean, not to say that's impossible, but I think we're so far from that. There's so much little things.
I don't know if we're so far from it. I think before you leave construction, it's definitely going to be a huge part of construction.
I can see playing a big role. It's just hard to fathom.
So now you've got guys that are trying to get into the industry. You guys that are trying to get out of the industry. You don't have the guys coming in staying as long as the guys that are just leaving right now. And now you've got a new type of worker coming in. And that's the robot, the AI, right? And it's just going to be challenging for
that's a big problem
keeping people in construction.
Well, that can be a major.
I mean, low-rise custom, and you want that craftsmanship. You're going to get certain people in certain neighborhoods, mostly higher net worth people. Mm-hmm. They're going to be hiring the person for their craft because that's who they are, right? They're getting someone that's skilled to build something for them instead of just buying a product that was manufactured in a warehouse by a robot. They're going to want this handmade door, whatever it is, right? But, I mean, look, Amazon's taking over. That's just bottom line. Everybody shops at Amazon. Yeah. Everyone uses it. I don't care who it is. It's just, well, maybe not the Quebec people, but, you know, I think that they're going to go back in. But they're going to go back in with robots. Then it won't be an argument anymore, right? Because you're still going to have to provide money for the province. You're still going to have to, it's still, in the end, making money. So if they can prove a model that it makes money and it gives the province money, people want it. Consider Expert Plumbing and Drains. When it comes to plumbing, you need someone who's not just skilled, but truly cares about the job they do. Someone like Aaron Bolin and his team at Expert Plumbing and Drains. Aaron has been in the trade for years and he's built his reputation on one thing, commitment. Commitment to his craft, his crew, and most importantly to you, the client. At Expert Plumbing and Drains, it's not just fixing pipes, it's about delivering the best possible service every single time on every single project. So whether you're dealing with a leaky faucet, a stubborn drain, or planning a full plumbing overhaul, Aaron and his team are ready to tackle it all with skill, integrity, and a passion for excellence. Need help now? Call Expert Plumbing and Drains at 905-531-4111. That's 905-531-4111. Or visit them at www.expertplumbinganddrains.com and on social media at Expert Plumbing and Drains Canada. Experience the difference of working with a team that's dedicated to getting the job done right. Because at Expert Plumbing and Drains, your satisfaction is their top priority. You can also email Aaron directly at aaron@expertplumbinganddrains.com. Expert Plumbing and Drains, where expertise meets care. This message is proudly supported by The Construction Life. They just fought with a union right now.
It's scary. That was the decision they made. It's very scary to think about. If that happens, what do we do? Like, what does anybody
already,
do?
I don't even know what the percentage is, but automotive's already changed to robotics.
Yeah. I actually know somebody that lost a job in an automotive Chevrolet or GM because they don't need them, right? They don't need them.
So automotive starting, there's a union there. So it's going to be interesting. And I just tell the young people, you don't have to be in construction at the ground level. You don't have to be on the site. You can be developing the machinery that does that. So maybe like you were saying about the drywall, like machine won't know how to do this because the drywall is a little bit off. But what if some kid right now designs a machine that knows how to clean up that drywall before you can install the door? And they come up with that program.
It's scary, man. If that becomes a reality, it's...
See, if I was a kid today, I'd be like, get on a job site and discuss with every single trade and discuss with the supers and the owners of the construction business and ask them, what's costing time? What is delaying the process of every single step? We know the A, B, C throughout the whole alphabet on what is needed to do a construction job. We know that. But we also know that there's these subsections that delay things, like that drywall, like stacking the trades, like all that shit.
Yeah.
And if a kid can come in here and come up with a way to get rid of all those hurdles, that's AI and that's robotics replacing the worker. And it's making things a lot smoother. You're eventually, it's going to be integration, then it's going to be replacement. Is it going to be replaced in our lifetime? I say so. I say a lot of, I've seen already a building be built, high rise, over 40 stories, 19 days it took. Not a single human being on that structure. Well,
look at China. They build mega structures in a couple of days.
So wait, they're already doing
it. Robotics.
I know. Everybody right now is like showing this video going around on social media about a robot that almost punched out a person because it went on its own, right? And then the person that was a part of the robot pulled the robot back, right? But the robot looked aggressive enough that it was going to attack the human, right? Mm-hmm. And so I'm just like, yeah, that's going to be happening. That's going to definitely be happening, right? Yeah. But until they figure out all the bugs, right?
It's part of it, yeah.
But to say that you're never going to see robots in construction, you're going to see robots. I've joked about it on the show several times, right? And I've also made fun of, like, the robots should have national colors.
Well, I wonder, you know? I'll ask you a question. What trade do you see happening first? I can see it happening first to for example, cleaners, the cleaning people.
You already have that with everybody's home and they got their vacuums, right? Exactly.
I think it's like the easiest, probably the easiest.
It's already there, right? So I which trade, I think they're going to attack every single trade. They'll all just
be at the same time, basically.
Yeah. Because the thing is, they're going to figure out ways of how to work collectively. So it's not like you're getting one robot that's going to come in and hang the drywall and that robot has to work with you as a finished carpenter. No, it's going to be a robot that's going to come in and do the drywall. Robot's going to come in and do the finished carpentry. It's going to be all that.
Right.
And if they were smart, they would just be watching the job sites, watching them. They're already doing that too. That's been presented where there's cameras on sites now and they're documenting the efficiency and the movements.
They do that. At the job site I'm at right now, they have these, I think they're engineers, but these younger like girls that are apprentices or whatever they are, they come in with these hard hats that have cameras attached to their head, 360 cameras that are attached to their head, and they go into units and do their thing to monitor the progress and whatever. They're just
documenting the work?
I'm not sure. Yeah, I'm sure they plug in their camera to a computer. It has analysis and
of course.
A bunch of stuff, right?
And that's what's going on right now.
And that's the beginning of integration.
They're figuring out, why did that one worker have to climb that ladder five times? They could have did that task in one climb. You know, how do we change this so then that worker doesn't have, that's each unit times 300 units in one unit, one building. All of a sudden you're spending four more trips on a ladder. Get rid of that time. That's what they're figuring out.
Time is money, right?
So in the end, it does. And once that building is ready and you start bringing people in, then you're converting mortgages, then you start doing another again, right? Another project.
Man.
So, I mean, obviously you guys are probably talking about that at the union because you have to be talking about it.
As far as the union, that's never been brought up. I've never heard.
Wow.
The union, I think we should start. I think maybe that's at least something to talk about, at least some kind of talking points. Maybe I'll even bring it up, but I haven't heard. It's just more of the guys on the sites that talk about it.
I mean, I know I asked you the question about 30 years in the future. It's a hard question to answer because you really don't know. Like, if you go back in 30 years from now, so the turn of the century, right, where you were at the end of the late 90s and you were looking at construction, at face value, construction still looks the same way.
Right.
From the 90s, right? It does.
Right.
But there's a lot of technology that's been put into construction. So you've got a lot of new machinery that's benefiting construction. Mm-hmm. So you've got a lot of modular stuff. You got a lot of
everything's battery powered.
Yeah, exactly. So everything is being moving quicker. That's the difference between, I think, construction today. So then you got to wonder, okay, so what's it going to be like 30 years from now? What's going to be the biggest hurdle?
Right.
And I think it's going to be the time thing again. I think you're going to see a huge increase in efficiency on building stuff. You're going to be seeing a hole in the ground. What's it now on average for a high rise? How long does it take on average?
So two years.
About 2 years. From the time you break ground?
The site I'm on now, mind you, is a smaller site, but we're done in less than a year. right? In Mississauga, I believe the building's called M5.
Okay.
I think it's on 80 story.
Down on Burnthorpe there?
Yeah, exactly. There's multiple buildings there. The first one is an 80 story, 90 story building, and it's expected to be done in 2 years. That's so a crazy, timeline.
What if you cut it in half? What if you cut it in 6 months? You make it 6 months then. That's crazy.
That's crazy. Yeah, I can't imagine.
As long as you don't sacrifice the quality, because there's no, and this is what I think Ontario is really good at, specifically Toronto and the surrounding areas, is they'll build faster, cheaper, and then it'll start to fall apart sooner.
Right.
Then you got deficiencies, all kinds of stuff, and then you're just, you're upsetting end users, homeowners, right? And then they'll eventually just sell and walk away from it,
right,
at that point, right? But if things start to fall apart, we've seen some bad work on these projects all over every construction. Bad work that's designed by efficiency and speed, right?
For sure, for sure. I see so many shortcuts, so many things in a building where it's like, I feel bad for the homeowners, right? Like, for example, there's a concrete wall. You can't change it. Like, we can't change it. But a door sliding door butts up to it. But the concrete is like 2 inches off. So what am I supposed to do to fix that? You can't. It's just, it shows, right?
And what do you mean, 2 inches out of plumb?
Out of plumb, yeah. Right? So when you butt up a door to it, it's like 2 inches to nothing, right? And they expect us to fix it. But there's nothing we can do to fix
that. So how do you fix that situation?
They're leaving it. They're literally leaving it, right?
So every time you close the door, there's a gap?
On the one whole side of the building, it's concrete, right? And it's exposed concrete. That's just the finish of it. And they're leaving it like that. And people are buying it. $700,000 to live in this place? It's crazy. The shortcuts by the builders are crazy. And I know that wouldn't fly 10 years ago.
But it is now.
But it is now, right? And that's just one example.
You want to chat about crypto?
Yeah, we can definitely get into crypto a little bit.
Let's talk about crypto.
By no means am I a professional. By no means what am I speaking is financial advice. I am not a financial advisor.
Everybody I talk to about crypto always starts the conversation by saying that.
Because you have to.
I know.
Because you have to.
Okay.
Right? I've been in crypto about 7 years. The reason why I got into crypto is during 7 years ago, I knew something had to change. I'm like, what is going to change? What is the next big thing, right? Digital. Everything's going digital, right? So money. Money's going digital, right? So What about money? How is it going digital? So I did my research and I came up with a company called XRP. I'm not sure if you know anything about it. XRP is probably 80% of my portfolio.
Okay.
I believe in it. I know there's a lot of research into it. And I believe that's going to be the future of our money and how we use our money, right? And that is happening right now with Donald Trump. He just tweeted about it.
About XRP or about his own?
Both, but specifically about XRP and
Brad. Really? What did he say about XRP?
He tweeted an article of Brad Garlinghouse, which is the CEO of XRP. Just the fact that he tweeted that is major, because XRP is what is an American company.
So why is XRP looking so attractive to so many people? Because obviously we saw the boost recently, right?
Well, exactly. It's taking time. I think I've been telling people about XRP when it was at 50, 70 cents, which was for 3 years at least, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Nobody believed it then because they didn't do the research, right? And now it seems like a lot of young guys are getting into crypto now, not just in an XRP, but just in crypto generally, meme coins.
Are they doing crypto and doing no different than the 80s and day trading, where guys were coming in and buying something and then pumping it and then selling it and getting the returns?
Yeah.
And then are they doing that right now with crypto?
Yes.
They're doing that right
absolutely
now with crypto?
Absolutely. There's examples of it. I think that just happened recently with, I think it was called, I forgot the name of the coin, but it just happened. That Haktua girl, that happened.
Oh, that's a
different
criminal thing, man. That's that's just what is happening, whatever. She started that and all of a sudden it just dumped, right?
Something like that. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't pay attention.
But even
to
Donald
that.
Trump got into his own, right? So.
Yeah. And I don't understand that. I think it's just more of a souvenir, like a collectible more than anything. But.
So, okay, back to the XRP thing.
Yeah.
It's obviously attractive now to the youth because it's had its growth in the last, what is it, a month or two?
Yeah.
It had a massive growth, right?
Yeah.
So 600% or something like that. It was crazy.
$3-$4. You have $3.
Yeah.
$2 almost.
Because for 2-3 years, it was probably stagnant at about 70 US or something, 70 US.
On average.
Yeah.
About there.
And then all of a sudden, I don't know what it is now. It's like almost four.
Almost four, basically $4.
But it almost got as high as $5.
Yeah, it did.
Which is crazy.
It did at one point.
And so everyone started talking about XRP, right?
Right. A lot of people are talking about it now. I think it's just more of the youth thing. I'm not sure how it all came out. It's just people are getting more into crypto and they're seeing what's happening.
So as a kid, why would you want to get on a job site and start swinging the hammer when you could just stay at home and just day trade?
It's too risky. I know some guys that made a lot of money just because they took a risk. And they're making a lot of money doing it. And they ask that question, where is this money coming from? How is it so easy, right? But I wouldn't recommend any. If you need to know what you're doing, you need to do your research before
you. Are you still treating crypto like long-term investment?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And I believe that is the only way you're going to make money.
Long-term investment.
Yes. Like, I mean, as
advice. You take Buffett's principles kind of thing.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Exactly. You buy, you hold, and you forget about it. And you never invest what you can't afford, right? So you just put in.
You invest what you can afford to lose. Yeah,
exactly. The money I've ever put in any crypto is money I spent. It's gone, right? So when I look at my portfolio, that's all money that is like, I invest in what I can afford, right? I never overinvest.
Attention subcontractors and skilled trades. Are you looking for your next big opportunity? 2x2 Construction is expanding and is on the hunt to grow our top tier network of professionals. Whether you're a carpenter, plumber, or roofer, etc., if you can deliver top quality craftsmanship, offer competitive pricing, and your communication is where we shine, we want to hear from you. At 2x2 Construction, we value strong partnerships. From multiplexes to garden suites, we're all about building better together, and we want you to be a part of it. Reach out today at info@2x2construction.ca or connect with us on Instagram at 2x2construction. Join the 2x2 Construction team where great work meets great people. This message is proudly supported by The Construction Life. What's the, I don't know anything about this, but what are the tax laws in Canada here regarding crypto and crypto capital gains?
I'm not sure exactly what the capital gains is right now, but there's a lot of rumors that XRP will be exempt of taxes.
In Canada?
I don't know about Canada, but I know in the US. And I wonder what's going to happen if they do that in the US.
Yeah, no, but we're in Canada here.
So I'm not sure how that works and what's going to happen.
Right, because obviously
the way I look at it, there's always tax. There's always going to be a tax, right?
Well, you know, you got Trump down there talking about no zero income tax for the entire country.
That's great, yeah.
Which, in my opinion, I've been saying that forever on this show, that there should be no income tax here in this country. We're paying way too much tax.
Way too much tax.
But we're not. We're just sheep, and we're just accepting.
Dude, I did the math. I believe, and this might not be exactly accurate, but the whole year, the money I made, 57% goes to taxes. 57%.
That's disgusting.
More than what I make.
So I'm just wondering on, like, what are they going to do with crypto earnings? Right, crypto capital gain.
It's going
to
be interesting.
There's no point in trying to go long term with it as an investment, and then have to withdraw it. And then all of a sudden lose half of it, if not more, right?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't know what the taxes are. I just, like, I got into it because I knew things are going to change. And right, and this is, we're so early, and I think we're still so early in crypto.
Yeah.
That if you invest and you invest smartly, you can make some money. There's potential to make some money for the future. And that's the way I look at it. It's all futures, nothing short term.
But see, that I think a lot of people are doing short term. I think a lot of people are like, let me just buy a little bit here. It makes a little bit of profit. Maybe it doubles my money, and then I pull out again, or I pull out half of it.
Yeah.
And then I leave the other half, and then maybe that grows a little bit. So they're making, like, I knew a few guys back in my 20s and 30s. They were full time just traders.
Really?
They just made money off of trading up and down. But like, you are no different than a gambler.
Oh, it's 100% gambling.
Yeah, you're risking a lot, and it's paying off in certain things, but then you're also losing a lot too.
Yeah, you got to treat it like gambling. It can become addictive, especially with all these meme coins. Crypto can be addictive, which is why you need to do your research.
How do you, like, because there's so many coins on the market, how do you know who's the XRP? How do you know who's the one that's going to be the winner in the end of things, right?
You don't. I don't know. I don't think anybody knows. I don't think anybody really knows. There's a lot of YouTube videos out there with people predicting things and predicting this and then saying that. And it's just people talking. I don't think anybody truly knows. And even with XRP, anything can happen with XRP. It could dump like crazy and everybody loses their money. We don't know. It doesn't, for me personally, it doesn't seem that way. That about XRP, it seems like it's only major banks are incorporating XRP. Like Brazil, they just approved ETFs for the XRPL, which is a major thing. For
digital transfers.
It's for digital transfers, right? So it's a start.
I'm attracted to crypto because I definitely think the future is going to be about digital currency transfers, right?
Right.
I think that people are going to be, they don't trust the system that is in place right now regarding money transfers, cash transfers.
Exactly.
With digital crypto transfers, they're getting rid of the problem that's not working for people.
Right.
Right? So it's like we see it all the time. Like, we got so sick and tired of ATM fees. Banks are making money off of this. And every time they come up with something, we complain about it, then they remove that service charge. But then they start realizing that all these banks are making millions and millions of dollars on top of these little micro service charges, right? So people get sick of it. It's no different than Amazon getting tired of fighting this fight. I'm like, well, we're going to come out of there. We're going to get out of here. So I could definitely see crypto being the norm in the future.
Right.
But you're right. You got to do your own homework. But there's a lot of... I have the same mindset. Crypto in my mind is a hold. It's a long-term investment. Right. And I personally know a lot of older guys that are my age or older that actually have invested in crypto.
Mm-hmm.
They're doing it for long. They're not doing it for pump and dump, right? They're totally are looking at it like, if this pays off, I threw 10 grand here. If this pays off, then guess what? I might have a nice little retirement package here and it adds to my portfolio. It adds to my money and then 100%. I'm happy, right?
Right. But you got treated as gambling, and I think that's very important.
It's still.
I think that's very important.
But stock market is too.
Yes, exactly.
Because we're not part of the inner circle that's controlling the stock market.
Yeah, and the thing is, crypto is so easily manipulated right now that I think that it's a problem, right? A lot of people are losing money. So you got treated with respect and as a gambling.
Well, because everybody's got this short. So I go back to the 7,500 hours, right? You've got a generation. I was never that way where things take time. And there's a reason why they take time, and you'll appreciate it more in the end. So if you want to just go in and just do day trading, you can do that. Will you make money? Maybe. We don't know. Will you lose money? Maybe. We don't know, right? But it takes time. So you need to figure out how long you want to invest into anything, whether that's crypto, whether that's construction, whether it's anything.
It goes with anything in life.
I remember a few years back, I remember seeing my electrician friend. He was on site. And he just got into crypto. And all of a sudden, all day long on this one job site, we were working, and he was constantly looking at his phone, And he was distracted all day long, right? And all of a sudden, I finally went up to him, and I was like, dude, what's going on? He goes, I'm just checking my crypto. And I'm like, well, I don't understand why you guys are just, it's up, it's up, it's going up. So I'm just checking it. I'm like,
yeah, that'll drive you crazy.
You're going to go ballistic if you're constantly checking it, right? It's like you don't do that. But then I don't know if he still does that. I don't know if he bought out. I don't know what's the story. But when I started seeing construction tradespeople start buying into it, sure. But like you said, buy into it with a plan.
Right.
Don't buy into it thinking that you're going to be that next billionaire. Yeah,
you need to have a bio plan as well.
Yeah.
You need to have a short-term bio plan and a long-term bio plan. Oh, if it goes up this much, I'm going to take out this. If it goes up that much, I'm going to take out this much, right? It's very important to have a bio plan. You always have to take out gains, because if you don't, I mean, if you're a short term, you got to take out your gains, or else you're going to lose all your money. A lot of people, statistics show people lose their money.
So you're
just
saying
like a casino.
If you're playing the short game, take out your gains.
Yes. I think
leave your principal.
I don't know one person that invested for long term that's lost money, right?
You never will.
Right? Because it's from 5-6 years, everything is up. So if you invested long term, you should be up money, right? But if you invest in short term,
do you think these big players on the stock market are actually dabbling in crypto?
Oh, 100%.
I know a lot of 100%. People say I don't think they are, even though they publicly present themselves like, no, crypto's I don't understand it, I can't touch it, I don't see it, whatever, so I don't get it, right? But no, I'm pretty sure
they know what the big corporations, they know what's happening, and
they have the money 100%. To begin with to invest into anything that's going to fail. what is the ratio? 20 to 1? You get a lot of VC investors that are investing into 20 different ideas and only one of them pays off?
Something like that, yeah.
So for them to say, no, we're not going to invest in crypto, I'm like, you guys are full of shit. You're a billionaire to begin with. You can take $1 million and you can dump it into
I can't prove everything, but I mean, I'm sure if you do your research, every major bank, Santander, Bank of America, they're all majorly investing in crypto. And they're just waiting for the right time where it all implements all together, right? Donald Trump is saying this publicly now, that crypto is here to stay, that it is the future. So it's interesting.
What's Bitcoin at right now?
140,000 American?
US?
American. Oh, sorry, Canadian.
Wow.
Yeah, that was about 100,000 American.
Still going up?
Slowly, it's definitely going up, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I'm not sure. I think it's going to keep going up. I think there's going to be some that fail, some major cryptos that do fail, and some that are going to stay and be here for long term.
Which one do you think that are going to fail?
I think Ethereum won't be here for long term.
You don't think Ethereum?
Yeah.
Ethereum is the one that doesn't consume power. Is that right?
The way I look at it, even Bitcoin. Bitcoin scares me as well. You know, a lot of people don't know this, and I'm not saying that this is what it means, but it's a beta international testing coin. Right, it was the first coin. Right, a lot of people don't know that the engineers that worked on Bitcoin are the engineers that worked on XRP, like David Schwartz. He's one of the guys who coded Bitcoin, and he publicly says Bitcoin is up. It's not that it's obsolete, but it can only go so far. It can only take you so far.
Got it.
XRP was made after Bitcoin, that fixes those problems that Bitcoin couldn't do. Right, so this is public.
So. I remember one guy, he gave me a book to read about Bitcoin years ago, right? It was a hard fucking read. Like, right. It was hard to understand, right?
Yeah, of course.
And it's just, you almost have to have a masterclass. I got to sit down with the person over and over and just keep on talking.
Yeah, yeah.
Figuring out shit, right? But I remember him telling me there was a theory, I don't know, you could probably poke fun at it or whatever, but he was like, Putin's behind Bitcoin. And I was like, there's a rumor, there's a conspiracy theory that he was behind it because it was about devaluating the US dollar. And
of course,
and now you're controlling
changing the whole system. Yeah.
But technically speaking, he's been doing that without Bitcoin. If he is doing it with Bitcoin, he is already making deals with other bigger nations than the US.
Well, he created BRICS.
That's what I mean. So it's like, it's a magic trick. Like, you distract him with this, you create this theory where it's like, I created this.
As far as when it comes to Bitcoin, I don't know if it was one specific person.
No, I think it was a group.
I think it's multiple countries together creating Bitcoin, which is why, what's his name? Satoshi Nakamoto?
Yeah.
That's who they say created it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But he's not a public figure, never will be.
Where is he?
Who is he? Who is he, right? And personally, I just think the reason for that is because when shit hits the fan, let's say, there is no one there. Who's going to take the blame for it, right?
It's true.
Right? Look at Ethereum. What's his name? Vitalik Buterin?
I don't know.
Yeah. Very smart guy. He's a very smart guy. But if you look at him, like, he went to a conference wearing a unicorn t-shirt. Like, it was business, all these business guys. Like, what? You're going to trust that? Like, there was a video of him picking his nose and wiping it on a chair. Like, who is this guy? This guy's crazy. Like, it's crazy.
Really? I haven't heard anything good about Ethereum.
You have Brad Garlinghouse, who's goes to meetings when Trump got inaugurated. One of the first meetings he had was with Brad Garlinghouse. And he's had two meetings since then. And there was a picture that was posted with Brad Garlinghouse, Donald Trump, and Brad Garlinghouse's like XRP's Ripple Labs lawyer, right? So things are happening behind the scene, right? You don't see that with Bitcoin. You don't see that with Ethereum.
So the rumor right now is that XRP is going to be leading the pack?
It's going to be one of them that lead the pack because Trump wants to promote American crypto. What's the only American crypto?
XRP,
Solana, XLM, right? So I think that's, if you do your research, that's...
What about Cardano?
That's American as well. So it's one of the trusted, let's say.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? ISO 22.
Yep.
Same language, let's say. So it's
interesting. 100%. It's no different than investing for the future. You can play the short game, but I definitely think it's a long-term game.
Right.
That's what it is.
So it's 100% long-term game.
You get in when you can. It was funny. When we had that surge there, a lot of people were just reaching out to me. I was like, why are you? It's your money. I don't care. Like, if you want to do it, then go ahead and do it, right?
Right. But just do your own research.
That's
do
all you
your
do.
Own research.
John Lugo, what else you want? Anything else before I get to the 12 questions? We talked about everything pretty much.
Yeah, I think so.
How many members are there in Local 27?
I believe, well, I'm not sure total, but I know in the high rise there's about 600.
600?
Yeah.
Just in Toronto area?
In the Toronto GTA area.
GTA area.
Maybe that's grown since then. That was a couple of years ago since I heard that. Maybe it's gone less, but it should be around 600.
You can reach out to you at GG_UBC. Gianluca. How do you pronounce last name?
Mastrangelo.
Mastrangelo. What part of Italy are your family from?
We're from the south, from Puglia. Bari is the town. The city of Bari. Major city.
Yeah,
major
with
city.
Major coastal city. Two I's or two R's? Is it two
one
I's?
R. One R. B-A-R-I.
What's the other town that's Baria? B-A-R-R?
I'm not sure.
There's a movie I made about it. That's why I know it. It's a good film, but a small town. It never really changed.
It's an ancient town. It's an old, old town.
I'm telling you the truth, man. I'm telling you right now. It's, let me just quickly, yeah. This is what I do because I know I'm stuck. B-A-R-R.
I can't wait to take my son back home there. He's never been.
Baria. What is it called? I got to find it. I'll let you know.
For sure.
I know that I've seen it. It's good. I'm trying to remember the name of it. Okay, ready for this?
Hit me.
A person you would trade places with for a day.
That's a tough question, but Jesus, why not?
Depends on the day.
That's true.
Guilty pleasure.
Going to Vegas.
You like Vegas?
So I've been twice for work and twice just for fun. Shout out to my boy Francois. I'll be coming there soon. He's a high roller in Vegas that I met. It's a funny story how we met. Definitely will share if you guys want.
Yeah.
But yeah, shout out to him. Definitely a guilty pleasure going to Vegas.
What's the funny story?
Well, so when I go, all I have to do is pay for the flights majority. He takes care of the hotels and stuff.
Okay.
Funniest story is, so nothing to do with him. It was the first time I was in Vegas. We went with our crew, the guys that we went with. One was a girl. So anyways, at the end of the night, we're leaving to go home. And all of a sudden, I feel her like leaning on me. It's fine. Like, I mean, just maybe she's tired. But I look over and she's like passed out. And I got her to the ground. And she's a follower of yours, by the way.
Okay.
And so anyways, she passed out and she was unconscious. And I'm like, holy shit, what hell's happening?
What's happening?
I don't know her like that. I don't know what's happening, what medical issues she may have. So I tell the other two guys, I'm like, guys, you go get water. I won't say no names or anything, but you go get water, you call an ambulance, right? Long story short, by the time they got back, there was a huge crowd. This is right in front of one of the major casinos, Flamingo in Vegas.
Okay.
There's a huge crowd of everybody around me and security, right? So it's me with this girl. It looks like I drugged this girl.
Right? She's passed out. She's on the ground.
Completely passed out. So I'm like, I don't know. Like, I don't know what's happening. I don't know her. I've just been with her, right? So anyways, eventually they come with water, and she kind of like started waking up a little bit, and she kind of muttered the words salt.
So
like, holy shit! Like, okay, you need salt. Maybe. So I thought she had maybe diabetes or something, sugar or something, but no, she's wanted salt. So I told the guy, okay, go get some salt. So he comes back with a napkin full of salt and obviously, you know, puts it in her mouth. Like I'm putting it in her mouth under her tongue. And about 10 minutes later, she finally woke up, right? But there was at least 50 people outside. It looked like I drugged this girl. And I don't know if you know, but calling an ambulance in Vegas is like 20 grand, right?
20 grand for them to show up?
I did some research. It's about 23 grand to call an ambulance. I don't know if that's true, but the fee for us would have been about 20 grand. That's crazy.
So why did she need salt? Did she drink something that she just wanted to absorb?
I think just salt deficient or something. But it's a funny story. I'll never forget it.
Wow. Okay.
You know who you are, Ray? I love you.
What is your least favorite tool? What is your least favorite tool?
Oh, least favorite tool is probably a sander because I hate sanding.
Biggest risk you ever took?
Biggest risk I ever took was for sure leaving residential to go do high rise, a whole new chapter in my life.
Best compliment you ever got?
Probably that the young generation looks up to me. Good. A lot of the young guys look up to me. That's a huge compliment.
What's your favorite beverage?
cold beer after work.
What brand?
No specific brand. I'm not really specific. Yeah.
What never fails to make you laugh?
This guy over here, my son.
Worst piece of advice you ever got?
That's a good question. That staying comfortable is a good thing.
Who told you that?
Well, I think it's a general concept, right? If there, a lot of people are,
the vibe.
Yeah, it's mentality. I know me personally, being comfortable is not a good thing because you're not growing. I am not growing if I'm comfortable. You grow when you're uncomfortable. You grow when you challenge yourself and make changes in your life.
100%. What profession other than your own would you like to attempt one day?
Realistically? I'm not sure, but I would love to be in some kind of like space engineering.
Out there? Up there?
Down here.
Or in Antarctica? I'm not a heights guy. Or whatever?
Yeah, anywhere. Anything that has to do with that.
Favorite curse word?
Favorite curse word? I don't really have one. I'm not really a cursor.
You don't curse?
I try not to. I always say it's a lack of it.
I'm not going
to
force anybody. Favorite vehicle? Any mode of transportation?
I'm a big Ferrari guy. Any
Which model?
Any Ferrari. Testarossa has always been my classic favorite. But if I had to choose like something realistic, like a Ford Bronco with big tires.
Testarossa is like realistic. They used to be affordable until all of a sudden everyone started talking about them. Now you can't find one for less than $100,000. It's just insane how much they're charging for their Testarossas now. I always liked them. I always liked the gills.
I love the style.
And the back, I swear it has the biggest ass in automotive history.
Yeah.
Like it's such a wide.
It's just a classic.
Yeah.
It's just a classic.
That's all it is. Still looks great today. And that car came out in early.
Oh my God.
1980s? No, mid 80s. 85 something or something. Like that came out, yeah. If heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say when you arrive at those pearly gates?
That's a good question, man. The only thing I would mean anything, which was welcome.
Gianluca, thanks so much, man, for reaching out.
Awesome. Thanks for being here.
Continue doing the good work on the site.
For sure.
All the union guys.
For sure.
I'm glad
I appreciate
it's still working. It's busy, so it's good.
For sure. I see a lot of positive things. So if you're looking to be a young carpenter joining our union, I think you won't look back.
No, of course not.
You won't look back.
You do well.
And that's any union, but you won't look back if you
join. But again, go in with a long-term plan and find the right people to discuss your long-term plans.
Yeah, for sure. And be talkative. Don't be shy.
Yeah.
I feel like a lot of guys are come in shy. You know, be positive. Be yourself. Definitely be yourself. Don't be try to be anybody you're not. And you will get far.
And then understand that you might meet some bad apples, but it's called life.
So it's bad apples along
everywhere.
The way.
Everywhere.
But you'll learn from that.
Yeah. And you'll meet some good people, and then they'll guide you in the right way,
100%,
right? 100%. That's it, man. Thanks so much, man. We're out of here.
Thanks for letting me.